The nation is still trying to heal from the tragic shooting that killed 58 and injured hundreds more at a Las Vegas music festival. After the shooting was over, the press scrambled to tell people what was happening.
In the countless reports and statements that followed the tragedy, terms like lone wolf were used to describe the shooter.
In the terrorism studies field, lone wolf attackers are generally defined as an individual or individuals who have no contact whatsoever with established terrorist group.
The Chertoff Group and an expert on lone wolf attacks.
This is an individual who was described as a lone wolf. I don't know how it could have been prevented if we didn't have any prior knowledge to this individual.
People try to fill in the blanks naturally. And so in this situation, the question is, was he acting as a lone wolf by himself or was there an accomplice?
The police said he was responsible for the deadliest attack in modern U.S. history, and that had many asking why the shooter wasn't just identified as a terrorist.
Our next guest says that calling him a lone wolf can expose a double standard about how we identify certain criminals, and he says it has a lot to do with the perpetrator's race or religion.
Khalid Maydoun is a critical race theorist and associate professor of law at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Law, and he's written about this for the Washington Post. Khalid, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
What kinds of assumptions do you think were made about the Las Vegas shooter fresh out of the gate there after the tragedy?
Yes, yeah, so the immediate presumption or assumption was that there were no ties, no connections to either a terror ideology or a terror network, but largely on grounds of his race, of his whiteness.
And what difference do you think it makes, if you can talk us through some of the associations with the different terms that we start to look for as markers into what kind of case might be unfolding? There are the phrase lone wolf, in this case, local man, and at the other end that you're talking about, we hear the word terrorist. What do these different terms mean?
Yeah, well, they mean dramatically different things, especially lone wolf, localer, and sometimes you have the assessment of, insanity that are swiftly made when the culprit is white. What those mean essentially is that they qualify as an exemption from the possibility of terrorism. They're deployed intentionally, oftentimes to disconnect an actor like Paddock from the possibility of terrorism. Whereas when we compare his case to the cases of Muslim or Middle Eastern actors, you see the opposite happening. You see a swift presumption, a swift branding of that actor as a radical or a terrorist to make that connection.
And who do you think is responsible for this type of characterization for the public? Is it the press? Is it the law enforcement? Who gets to make those calls?
Yeah, well, I think it goes deeper than, blaming law enforcement or, blaming the media. I think it's just, especially since 9/11, you have just, a very embedded and entrenched racialization of specific segments of the country, Muslims and Middle Eastern and, Arab populations as being inextricably tied to terrorism, unfortunately. And that's obviously bolstered by the war on terror and specific laws that carry forward the war on terror. Whereas, the long legacy of race and racism in this country, especially with the way we think about whiteness, is that, it disconnects whiteness, essentially disconnects individuals from collective action or collective guilt. But we see law enforcement and media essentially, echoing these narratives.
Let's talk a little bit about the idea of collective guilt, which is something that comes when you were talking about labeling someone a terrorist, and then presumptions are made that that person might be a Muslim terrorist, and then that they have affiliations with a greater community. And we talk about collective guilt. What happens when that label ends up being used in a situation, maybe accurately or inaccurately?
Well, it kind of unfolds in, along two streams or two lines, if you will. So we first see it with, the culprit himself or herself, that there's the immediate idea that that individual cannot be a lone wolf, that that individual was not acting in a solitary capacity, that he or she must be connected to a broader collective. And typically that collective is a terror network. We also see it kind of spill over, into the experience of Muslim Americans at large, right, where there's this, immediate kind of call, immediate kind of command from whether it be the state or the media to disavow or apologize for the actions of a culprit like an Omar Mateen or the Orlando shooter or the actions of the two culprits in San Bernardino, which, again, just highlights the idea that all Muslims, regardless of, where they are and where they were when something like that took place, were in some way connected.
So do you think that if, for example, there is an act that's perpetrated by a white shooter, or even if you look at the racist rallies in Charlottesville, not rallies isn't the right word, but does that absolve certain communities of guilt that wouldn't be absolved in other situations?
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, the Charlottesville riots or whatever you want to label them are a really vivid example of how you you don't have that same, you know, phenomenon of collective guilt or, you know, association, you know, being leveraged or being assigned to whites. Right. So, for instance, when those riots led to the death of three individuals, there was no broader call on the part of the media, the mainstream media or the state, you know, for whites or even, you know, not whites at large, but, you know, whites, for instance, who had, you know, white supremacist kind of leanings to have to disavow or apologize for those incidents.
We're talking right now with Khalid Beydoun. He's a critical race theorist and associate professor of law at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Law. And he says there's a double standard when it comes to deciding who is called a terrorist. And Khalid, it seems as though we're at a point right now in our culture where we don't really know, when we see these large acts of violence, we don't agree about what a terrorist is. You have a definition for that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have, you know, kind of a finite technical definition. What I do is to kind of grapple with the idea that Muslim identity should not be presumptive of terrorism. I think one of the shortcomings in our, you know, body of, you know, law is that there isn't a precise and kind of consensus definition for terrorism. Now, if you were to ask me to offer a definition of terrorism, I would be inclined to kind of construct it in a way to strip it away from a specific racial or religious identity and focus merely on the violence that's inflicted and the idea that it's motivated by some sort of hate, some sort of, you know, violent kind of viewpoint.
Does that distinguish it at all from a hate crime?
Yeah, you know, there's an interesting overlap between hate crimes and acts of terrorism. And the legal distinction kind of rests upon which groups are designated as hate groups and which groups are designated as terror groups, right? So oftentimes, you know, white-led or white-populated groups in this country are not fully designated terror groups. That's why you don't have, you know, many incidents that are carried out by, you know, white supremacists being designated as terrorism and so on. But I think that there really needs to be critical thinking about having a broader kind of designation of terror groups that does not only include, you know, Muslim actors.
Right now, Khalid Beydoun stays with us. He's a critical race theorist and associate professor of law at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Law. And we're talking about how our guest says there's a double standard when it comes to deciding who gets called a terrorist.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you think. Do you think there are double standards when it comes to labeling people with words like terrorist or lone wolf? How do you think the Las Vegas attacker and other mass shooters should be characterized? Do you think counterterrorism efforts are should be targeted at more groups than they currently are? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
We're picking up the conversation with Khalid Beydoun. He's a critical race theorist and associate professor of law, and we're looking at what he describes as a double standard when it comes to deciding who gets labeled a terrorist.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of how the media, law enforcement, and others label people who make these mass public attacks with terms like lone wolf or terrorist or not one of those? Do you see double standards or religious, racial, ethnic bias when identifying these attackers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
And we go to our callers now. We have Mike joining us first in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I remember learning in the 60s that terrorism, the definition was a group that causes fear or terrorizes another group of people. And if I recall correctly, the term lone wolf, that is somebody that is called to do terrorist acts. I believe the word is what, stochastic terrorism. where you have a TV show and you say this abortion doctor needs to be killed, and then the next night you say this guy needs to be murdered, and then one of these lone wolves goes out and kills him.
What is the term you use for that?
I think it's stochastic terrorism. I believe that's what it is.
Metastic, maybe something? Got it, Mike. Thank you for those thoughts. And Khalid, what is your response to some of these terms and how they may have changed over the years?
Yeah, so the terms have changed because our understanding of terrorism has changed. In the 60s, the framing of terrorism and the concern with terrorism the state had was largely with state-sponsored terrorism. So the primary culprit at that time was the Soviet Union. It was a nation state that kind of threatened state-sanctioned terrorism against the United States. In the 90s, it was more along lines of transnational terror networks. Now it's individuals. Instead of soldiers of a terror network inflicting terrorism or, agents of a nation state, it's individuals who are functioning in a solo capacity. So it's fluidly shifted over time.
Mike, thank you for the call. And we go next to Kaiser from Milwaukee. Kaiser, hi.
Yes. Before we start, I am a Muslim. I've lived in this country for about 37 years. So every time, for example, this what happened, and I feel very guilty even saying it, that when this thing happened in Las Vegas, and when I saw the news, and at that time, we did not know who he was. And the only thing I could, and I feel ashamed even thinking, and I was praying, I hope, oh, Lord, I hope he's not Muslim. Well, then I started thinking, okay, I started praying, oh, God, I hope he's not a Latino, because the wall is about to go even higher if he's a Latino. And, you know, a lot of times, for example, we bring, you know, this guy in Orlando, the shooter, he was just a human who was going through a conflict between his religion and his gayism, you know, and him being a gay. And why could we not? It could have been a born again Christian who was going through the same. And he could. Why did we have to bring Muslims into this? Timothy McVeigh was a born again Christian. We did not hear anywhere. We did not. No leader came out and said, oh, God, we are going to go after born-again Christians because they're all terrorists. Why is it that when it's, you know, why do we have to worry as Muslims? Why do we have to worry about in this country? Where are we going with this whole scenario?
Kaiser, thank you for the thought there. And I want to start with his personal remark. When he first heard about this shooting, Khalid, he said he prayed, please don't let the shooter be a Muslim. And that's, I think, part of what you're getting at in your piece here.
Yeah, so, you know, stepping aside, you know, taking my, I guess, professor hat off for a second, you know, that is something that's experienced by Muslims across the board, especially since 9/11. Even before 9/11, that when an attack or a shooting of this kind actually happens, that's just kind of the, the thoughts that are, you know, really scrolling through our minds at that point, because we understand what the backlash will look like if it is, in fact, a Muslim. It's a psychosis that I think is... it's become so integral to the Muslim American experience and narrative, sadly.
And what about what he was getting at there, Kaiser, his other part of his comment about how come other groups are not kind of brought into the fold when there is a mass attack? And he did think about what would happen if the shooter had been a Latina. What would that mean politically? What does it say about the way that we are using sort of group politics to associate with acts of mass violence?
Yeah, and that's where race is really important. Like when we talked earlier about the idea of, you know, collective action, collective responsibility, that isn't something that's exclusive to Muslims, right? So we see that obviously with the experience of African Americans in the criminal context. We also see that with Latinx communities with regard to, how individuals who are undocumented or quote unquote illegal are caricatured, and the specific, you know, kind of stereotypical inclination that's tied to Latino identity with criminal deviance. So that idea of collective action responsibility is also tied to the experience of Latinos, sadly. So if the shooter, you know, was Latino or Black and so on, you'd see the same kind of, damaging rhetoric that would hold the entire group as being in some way responsible.
I'll try to take one more quick call here. Rebecca in Madison, you're next.
Yes, I just wanted to quickly comment for what it's worth and say that I believe anyone who's committing any act of terror or anything that's supposed to cause fear or any kind of political thing should be labeled a terrorist, regardless of where they come from, their political persuasion, their religious beliefs, or their ethnicity.
Rebecca, thank you for the call. And Khaled, before we let you go, I want to ask you, in our last 30 seconds, how would you like to see the press, law enforcement, society approach things moving forward?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, in the ideal world, I would, you know, highly hope that instead of making immediate kind of assumptions or presumptions that are linked to racial and religious identity, that law enforcement, you know, thoroughly conduct an investigation before coming to a conclusion, whether the culprit be white, Muslim, black, or brown.
Khaled, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Khaled Beydoun is a critical race theorist, associate professor of law at the University of Detroit Mercy School of Law. He says there are racial and religious double standards when it comes to identifying criminals as terrorists.